My name is Agatha Samuel tonight. What is happening to the project of keeping Accra clean? Are the residents helping to improve the environmental hip field? Or the AMA is losing steam and being overwhelmed by the mountain fill? Ghana Trade Union Congress says Ghana's economy is getting worse by the day, with an indication that the country is failing. Is the labor union creating panic among Ghanaians? And is the government worried about the damning description of the economy by the TUC? Stay tuned for the next 1 hour so we bring you details of all these on our program tonight. You can also join the discussions by text on 0266-677570. 0266-677570. But first, Barbara Yakubu is here with a summary of the day's news.
Thank you, Agatha. China says it will consistently fund the gas processing plants at Adwabo to ensure it is fully operational by July this year. The incoming Chinese ambassador to Ghana, Sun Buanghong, announced this when she and other envoys presented their letters of credence to President John Mahama at Flagstaff House in Accra today. The National Malaria Control Program and its major key partners have drafted a new strategic plan which will focus on accelerating malaria control to further reduce malaria mortality in the country. Deputy Program Manager of the program, Dr. Kezia Mam, stated this at a Deba to mark this year's National Malaria Day at Wa in the Upper West Region. Meanwhile, the final results of the much anticipated malaria vaccine will be out in July this year. The Industrial and Commercial Workers Union has advised workers to work hard to increase productivity to counter current economic challenges. The union believes this will afford workers greater bargaining power in negotiations. General Secretary of the ICU, Solomon Kote, said while employers consistently complain about increased cost of production, they on the other hand seek better conditions of service. And 5 people have received prizes of return air tickets from Accra to any destination of their choice in the country. The prize winners participated in a quiz competition organized by Unique FM to mark Ghana Broadcasting Corporation's Heritage Month, which took place in March. 9 other winners were presented with cartons of assorted drinks.
Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Garden City Radio 92.1 in Kumasi, Twin City 94.7 in Takrabi, and Ubunu FM 96.5 in Tema. Accra, the nation's capital, is virtually being submerged by filth. Watchers of the environment believe the huge filth all over the capital should not be laid squarely only on the doorsteps of government, but by residents of the city as well. Habits such as throwing filth on the streets and into gutters with careless abandon has succeeded in making the problems of Accra look like it is nobody's business. Others, however, believe the authorities, and in this case, the AMA, should take some of the blame for all the filth and garbage in Accra. So we ask the head of public affairs of the AMA, Numo Blafu, whether the assembly has failed in its task of cleaning Accra, and he's currently on the line. Good evening, Numo, and you're welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Numo, has the AMA failed to clear Accra of all the garbage and filth all over the place?
Excuse me?
Has the AMA failed to clear Accra of all the garbage and filth all over the place?
No. AMA has not failed in its duty to clean up the city or to make the city clean. The issue at hand is that we have a big challenge on our hands. And the challenge is the final disposal site, which the AMA at the moment does not have one. We are in the process of acquiring one, but at the moment, we have to cut all the refuse from Accra to either Tone or Tema. And we're looking at the traffic situation and its attendant problems. And even getting to the landfill site, you still have other trucks too, who are also there to actually dispose of their refuse. So the problem we are faced with is that getting the refuse from Accra to that place, the trucks which are supposed to take the refuse to that place cannot go the frequency as they need to go. And that is the challenge we are having. At the moment, Accra is generating over 2,800 tons of refuse. And we are able to effectively collect only 2,200. So this is the challenge we are having.
In that regard, whose fault is it that we have a mountain of filth in certain parts of Accra waiting to be cleared?
You see, the issue also lies with the residents within the metropolis, because we ask them to actually register with the waste management contractors that have been contracted to take the refuse from their homes. And some are actually giving it to these Kayabola people, whom they don't know where they finally dispose of the refuse. And these people will take the refuse from your homes, and then they get to certain places, and they dump it there. In the morning before you wake up, these refuse are all over the place. We try as much as possible to collect what is there. But then the frequency is another challenge due to the traffic situation in town and the distance the trucks have to go and come back to lift the rest. So we are actually challenged.
No more, there is this unfortunate situation too, when the gutters are clear, the rubbish is left on the shoulders of the gutters, and then when the rains come, they go back into the gutters. There has always been the complaint that those who clean those gutters have nowhere to put them.
It's a perception, because you see, when a refuse is collected from the drain, they are wet. So they are left there for it to be drained, for the water to drain off it before they come in to collect. In short, this is a report that I've had before to check myself. And when the crew who came to report this thing, we had to go back to the place to see what they came to report. There was nothing there because it had been collected. So normally, when they remove the refuse from the drains, they allow it to be on the shoulders of the drains for the water to drain off before they are collected. So this is the situation.
So are you saying that they leave the rubbish there for a while and then collect it later?
Yes, we normally do.
But then still there are complaints that they are kept there till it rains and then it washes into the gutter.
That's what I'm saying. I've had the opportunity to get such a report, and I asked the people who came to me for us to go there, because they were describing the place where they found it. And when we went there, it has been collected. Because I actually explained to them how I've explained to you. You understand? But they didn't understand. They said the people there are saying the things are left there and they go back into the drain. But when we went back to check, it has been collected. So this is, it's actually a problem which people need to understand. And also, I think, let me also take this opportunity to educate our residents that we need to take opportunity of this situation where they need to register with the waste management contractors. They should refuse giving their refuse to the Kayabola people, because actually these are the people who will normally come in, collect your refuse, but at the end, you don't know where they finally dispose of it.
No, what has also happened to all the cleansing services previously employed by the AMA to clear the rubbish in the city?
The cleansing what?
Services.
We have contractors, we have waste management contractors who do the work. We have about nine waste management contractors, yes.
And you are saying that they are doing their job efficiently?
They are doing all they suppose or they can do. But you see, the situation is the distance from the city center to the final disposal site. That is where we are challenged. If, for example, as we're speaking now, we are in the process of acquiring about 100-acre land where we're going to use as an engineered landfill site. It wouldn't be the former situation where we just identify a pit and then we fill it with the refuse. But this is going to be where the refuse will be actually separated and then used for other purposes. In short, we have been looking forward to going by the way of waste to energy. So these are things that are underway at the moment in the AME. But the problem that we have is that the distance where we are sending the refugees now is our biggest challenge. Seriously.
But do you have sanctions or penalties for people who are later at their city?
That is, if you are able to catch the people. In short, about 2 weeks ago, we have the chance to prosecute, I think, about six Kayabola people, because they were found as people who were dumping refuse under traffic lights and along roads where we have not approved that people should dump refuse. So they were taken to court, and I think they are on remand.
And no more, the least said about what happens in our markets, the better, failed by foodstuff being sold to customers. Is there anything radical the assembly can do to halt the pervasive garbage from taking over the city?
Garbage will not take over the city of Accra. Garbage will never take over the city of Accra. But it also behoves on us all as to how we will manage our refuse for collection. Because, for example, if you have registered and you have been given this thing, you can put the refuse in, cover it nicely until the waste management contractors come in to collect. In the markets too, as you are seeing, the refuse you see in the markets are normally not refuse from the market, not all. Some come from communities around the market. And you see, we have areas where we have actually demarcated that we can put the refuse there for collection. So the moment we collect, people come in and dump. I'm telling you that if we should leave refuse in Accra for about 2 days uncollected, we can't sit down. That is the situation we have. But the challenge, as I'm always, and I would like to emphasize, is the distance from the city center to our final disposal site.
Well, today is World Malaria Day. What message do you have for Ghanaians or people who are later the environment, especially in Accra?
Yes, let me take this opportunity again to actually tell them that the situation at hand, we all need to put our shoulders to the wheel, because you can't say that you will litter someplace and then leave it. You see, we even have people, the moment they see that it's about to rain, that is when they gather their refuse and then dump them in the drain for the water to carry it away. Forgetting that this refuse they dump in the drain can choke the drain somewhere, and then later on it can cause spillovers, which we normally refer to them as flooding. And if it happens, it is people in the communities, maybe a few people have done this, but then a lot of people are going to suffer.
All right.
So all I'm trying to say is that we should be keepers of our brothers. I mean, we should watch our own community. We should make sure that we even report people who we see doing these things, because AMA won't be everywhere at the same time.
All right.
If we get reports, we can go in and then summon the people and prosecute them. You see, in certain jurisdictions where you see patriotic people, some people will be doing something somewhere, someone will be somewhere, and then we'll call the police and the person will be arrested. So why don't country emulate such kind of conduct, at least if we want to live in a very clean environment?
Numo, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Numo Blafo, you said of Public Affairs of the AME, it's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Unique FM 95.7 in Accra. The TUC says the state of Ghana's economy has been reduced to buying and selling because of policies of the government, and our state has become deformed and unable to undertake the simple task of governing. All the high and low profile corruption now become all too pervasive are symptoms of a weak and failing state. We need to rescue and rehabilitate the state and place it at the front and center of national development. Mr. Kofi Asamoah voiced out these strong sentiments about the Ghanaian economy at a pre-May Day forum in Tema in the Greater Accra region today. So are These strong words from the TUC boss, a sign of coming events as we prepare for this year's May Day celebrations. And Mr. Samuel has joined me on the line. Good evening, Senya. Welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Mr. Samuel, why these strong words in describing the state of Ghana's economy?
No, I think if we... Hello?
Yes, I'm listening to you. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, let me start by saying that, you know, next week is May Day. And as part of the preparation for the May Day, various activities have been lined up. And one of the activities was the forum created in both Accra, Tema, and the regional capital. The idea was to bring together government and other stakeholders and labor to discuss the economy. And indeed, the theme for this year's May Day is Ghana's economy, the concern for all. So as part of it, we try to analyze Ghana's economy. And indeed, let me make reference to the fact that we are not talking about only today. We are saying that the structure of the economy has not seen any transformation over 30 years and beyond. For a long time, the structure of the economy has been the same. The fundamentals have been quite the same. And we have remained commodity export country. We have not added values. The international dictates have over-liberalized our economy, where everything, including food, is imported into the country. The same neoliberal policies have destroyed the state. If you say the state, we don't mean government. State and its apparatus. The apparatus that made up for government. Because the contention in the past has been that the state has nothing to do in the management of the economy, really. So it has pushed the state and its institutions. It has weakened state and its institutions, the liberalized economy. It has equally also destroyed our industries, where we give prominence to support foreign investors as against local investors. So we're analyzing the economy generally from that perspective, and we want to say that this is what has led us into our economy hasn't been weakened. And if we want to make headway, it will be important that we overhaul the whole economy in ensuring that we place premium on supporting our local industries as against opening our doors so wide for all goods, manner of goods to enter, and as a result make our economy not to be on a sound footing. So in effect, when we talk about that, what we mean is that the state, the economy is weakened in a level that anytime there is an international shock, it throws out almost everything that we have in the country. So generally, we are talking about the kind of economic, neoliberal economic policies we have pursued over 30 years ago up to today.
But at today's forum, you mentioned Ghana becoming a failed state. But is that the case?
It's not.
Because
Ghana.
Some analysts think they are strong words.
No, what we mean, if we refer to the state, it's not the state, and we're referring to the institutions that have been weakened. The institutions, it's like normally when you operate a kind of a market economy, it weakens the state apparatus. The state is different from government. The state is the institutions, our institutions. And we are saying that until we bring the state into the center of development, we are not meaning Ghana as a state. We are talking about state institutions and all the things that goes with it.
But then someone will ask, what has been the contribution of TUC to help the managers of the economy to deal with the gloomy picture you are painting?
The picture we are assessing Ghana's economy. And we are not assessing Ghana's economy from only today. We are assessing Ghana's economy where after independence, what we have done. The TUC and labor movements, organized labor, have been part of engagements. We've been intervening in policies. We have consistently been against the IMF, World Bank policies, and dictates that has taken us up to this level. Again, as we also concede that the productivity of this country is quite low, and it's so many things attribute to having a very low productivity. So yes, the workers and the organization as part of the country have also been engaged our stakeholders and our social partners in a way. And I think that is not the first time we have been talking about the economic direction. And in fact, what we are talking is that we're not talking about government for now, but the economy over the years, what we have not been able to do is to work to ensure that we place value on our commodities. An analogy was made that, for instance, 1 ton of cocoa could buy in the past one VW. Now you need about 20 tons of cocoa to buy the same one VW, which has seen modernization over the years. So we are saying that until we move the country from the primary commodities and the fact that we do not add value to what we export, our country will not be able to come out from the kind of challenges we are in now and into the future.
And you're also saying the economy has been reduced to a buying and selling one. What has necessitated this?
Yes, what we're saying is that no country has ever developed on selling what other people make elsewhere. What we are making is that now if you look around, the country has been reduced to buying and selling. Everybody is because all manner of goods are dumped on us. We have reduced ourselves to selling other people's products as against developing the productive sectors of our economy. And if you check around, everybody is interested in buying and selling because Ghana has become a dumping ground for all goods and services. So the point is that we are drawing attention to the fact that we have over-liberalized our economy so much so that now everybody has become a trader. If you go through cities, houses and everything are being converted to sell goods that are brought from outside. And that we are saying that no country has developed on just selling other people's goods. But then we should look at what can really be added to our primary commodities so that we can as well be able to industrialize enough to be able to compete in the global economy.
Now, your words that foreign investors get more incentives over domestic investors has not been received well by our government commentators. Any evidence?
What we are saying is that, for instance, if you take gold and the mining companies, they are all in foreign hands. Our current oil is also in foreign hands. In most cases, they are able to repatriate 80% of the money that they make outside the country. They only retain about 10 or 20% here. So, and it is also a fact that we are not supporting local industry the way we do to foreign investors. We give way for foreign investors all over to do. Look at the banks and everywhere. Foreign investors have taken over everything. And we think it's about time we find a way to support our local investors so that they can also be able to develop. And we strongly believe that these are the things that when we do, can put the economy in a sound footing.
Now, let's talk about the EPA. And we know Ghana, from all indications, will go along with other ECOWAS countries to sign on to the EPA. Is it not possible the partnership will help to tackle the economic problems of Ghana?
We have said repeatedly that not the EPA itself, but several aspects of the EPA is not favorable to Ghana. We have repeatedly talked about that. There are merits and demerits of it. But the demerits outweigh the merits. They're saying that when we sign the agreement, we'll have 100% entry into the European market. They will also come and have about 80%. They know that we do not even have the goods. They will end up over-liberalizing our economy in a way that will continue the same cycle that we are complaining. It's not today. We have almost always said, and civil society, not only in Ghana, but the whole of Africa and the sub-region have all complained that the EPA would not be to the interests of Ghana, as it were. We appreciate the other side of it, as it were, but if you want to weigh the merits and the demerits, it goes against Ghana, the way the whole agreement is, against the benefits of Ghana.
So what is your beef about the corruption also? You mentioned a little bit about corruption.
And since we are analyzing the economy over 30 years, we find out that one of the things that has also not helped the country over 30 years and now has been corruption, both in the high levels and also at the low levels. We are not only talking about politicians. We're talking about corruption being a big blow to us, both at the high levels and the low levels. And our analysis of the economic situation over 30 years has proven that our major problem over the years that has hampered our development has also been corruption at high levels and also low levels.
But has government got anything to do with it, as you talked about cronyism, partisanship, and incompetence?
We are not talking about this government. We are analyzing the economy. I told you the basic point is that Ghana's economy has not seen any transformation over 30 years now. So all we are talking about, cronies and incompetencies, have all been an assessment over the years that Ghana's economy has been growing. And it has pervaded through several other governments. We are not talking about the current government. And that is why I'm saying that the point we are making about our economy hasn't seen any transformation structurally is not dated today. And we are asking that until we begin to industrialize, Africa and us begin to industrialize, we see corruption and other things over the years as something that has also contributed to the situation that we are in. And let me state that the analysis we are making is not only this current government, the current government ever since 30 years and beyond, 3 decades of analysis that we're making.
So what will your message on May Day be different from this one?
Definitely, I told you the May Day thing is on Ghana's economy and the concerns for all. So almost everything we do with the May Day will be centered around Ghana's economy. And indeed, there are other aspects of Ghana's economy and its assessment over 30 years and over, which will be laid out for the May Day celebration. So all discussions for this year May Day is centered around Ghana's economy and what every Tom and Dick and Harry can do. There is the role of government, there is the role of individuals, there is the role of the citizens, there is the role of everybody. If you take, for instance, the fact that we have developed foreign trade, it is also encouraging the dumping of goods in Ghana. What can you do? The president talked about the need to give prominence and to prioritize made in Ghana goods, local goods. These are the kind of things we are all discussing in ensuring that we change our attitudes, we change our taste, we change our policies in a way that can promote Ghana as against where we are now, opening our gates so widely for us to be a dumping ground for all forms of commodities.
In that regard, does the TUC have any medium and long-term solutions to Ghana's economic woes?
As I said, everybody has a role to play. And as working people, we have a way to play in ensuring that we help to maximize productivity. We do all what is expected of us. So in such engagements that we'll be doing, we'll be looking at what workers can do, what the TEC as workers organization can do, what everybody can do, and ensure that we need to bring all hands on deck and change our attitudes and our way of doing things to help salvage our country.
Mr. Asamoah, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Kosi Asamoah is the Secretary General of the TUC. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. And government instituted a number of measures to reduce corruption in the system. One of such measures was the code of conduct for ministers to regulate their behavior. The TUC thinks corruption in the system is too pervasive, with Ghana not only experiencing a weak economy. So how is the government fighting the canker of corruption? Mutala Mohammed is the Deputy Minister of Information and Media Relations and joins us on the line. Mutala, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, and good evening to your cherished listeners.
I'm sure you've been listening to my conversation with Mr. Asamoah. But to begin with, what has happened to the code of conduct that government recently introduced to check corruption among government officials? Because the TUC says corruption is still pervasive in the system, in spite of all the laudable efforts of government in that direction.
Well, I listened to several media houses on the press release or a statement issued by TUC as a prelude to the May Day celebration, which is just around the corner. And when I listened to the statement as it was being read in some of the media houses, I was in the first place shocked, honestly, that TUC could issue such a statement until when they had Mr. Asamoah on some of the media houses, particularly listening on Joy FM, and he gave some explanation. I said, okay, possibly one could take him out of context. Because if you listen to the statement is so open-ended, the statement is so, you know, if like, you know, unrestricted. The statement was so blanket that for a moment, if you don't get this kind of explanation that has been given by the leadership of TUC, you would think that they are making reference to the government. And if you listen to him repeatedly, just as he has done in other media houses, that the statement is not in reference to this government. It is in reference to all successive governments. And he went further to talk about the fact that that assessment was done for our economic performance for the past 30 years. And I think that this point must be made and made clearly. Let me also state that there is a definition for what constitutes a failed state. And therefore, if you look at that definition, that is internationally agreed that when these things are done, you can say that the state has failed. I don't think that we are anywhere near that definition or description. So for TUC to make that conclusion that because of ABCD, because there is some level of corruption, because there is some interdependence, if you like, on foreigners in terms of our infrastructure and industrialization. And for that reason, we are moving towards a failed state. I think that is completely far-fetched. I don't think that we are anywhere closer to that. But let me address the issues one after the other. The TUC is celebrating May Day every year. Every year. Every year they celebrate it. It's an annual ritual. Now, last year we celebrated May Day. We have been celebrating. Now, if you have a system in which you have a president of the Republic of this country who made a public pronouncement that I will not prosecute alleged corruption in my government, if I do so, I risk collapsing the government. TUC was in existence. TUC never said that corruption was pervasive. So what has changed today? Again, if you look at all the allegations that have been leveled, you are talking about a government that says that I will not just say that I will not prosecute alleged corruption in my government, because if I do so, I risk collapsing my government. The government says that any time there is any allegation of corruption against any individual or state institution or state program, I would institute investigation, and if there need be for some prosecution, I will prosecute without blinking an eye. And that's precisely what this government has done. All the allegations that have been leveled, some of them either on radio stations or newspaper publications, government didn't say I will not prosecute alleged corruption. Government said investigate. Investigations are conducted. Reports are submitted. And government has implemented every single recommendation that indeed were captured in the investigative committee. If you take GIDA, for example, every single recommendation that was made by the committee that investigated GIDA has been implemented. Some of the recommendations included, one, certain people ought to be prosecuted. Two, contracts ought to be abrogated. Three, certain individuals ought to pay money for which they have taken without any justification. Five, certain contracts that were abrogated must not be renewed. And six, which is also very critical, that there is a need for a restructuring of the entire GIDA program. This is precisely what this government has done. I ask you, my sister, if there is any government who is committed in fighting corruption, can we have any government that is better positioned and determined without any fear to prosecute corruption than what President Mohamed's led administration is doing? That, for me, is fundamental. Another point which you asked, which is in relation to the ethics, the issue has to do with the ethics of government.
They have always been ethics, and I can tell you that every single ethic of this government that was captured in that book has been followed. And anybody who breaches that, indeed, will have himself or herself to blame. It is also significant for us to make another point, which for me is very, very critical. I say it is critical because we have challenges with our fundamental economic, you know, the fundamentals of our economy.
And how are we addressing that?
That is the point. His Excellency the President said when he addressed, when he had the State of Nation address in Parliament, that yes, there is a need for us to do something with our economic fundamentals. And that is why we need to move from just producing and then to processing those goods into finished goods, such that we will not indeed depend on other nations to be able to give us the needed support. Now, if you look at the fact that we haven't been able to transform our economy for the past 30 years, and that should drive you to making such conclusion that yes, we are driven towards a state failure, then one would say that the TUC is already failed. Because for the past 30 years, I haven't seen any transformational changes in terms of the structure of the TUC, in terms of the structure of labor movement in this country. I haven't seen it. And if someone says that because TUC and other labor unions haven't been able to do that, they are failing. I don't think that Sophia Samuel and Co. will be very comfortable with that. Because there hasn't been any transformational changes in the fundamentals of TUC operation. So it's a process. The changes of the fundamentals is a process. It is not an event. Now today, if you tell me that we are so indebted, the United States of America is hugely indebted to communist China. Would we say the economy of America or America is driven towards the failed state? And I think that statement was far-fetched.
But are you comfortable to hear from TUC that the failure of policies that you have actualized massive industrialization has contributed to reducing the economy to a buying and a selling one?
I am saying that yes, it is true that if you look at some of the policy initiatives, but it is also true and equally true that those policies indeed yielded some positive results. If you tell me that those policies do not yield anything, then I would disagree with you. Sadly and unfortunately, we live in a country where we have had successive coup d'etats in our country. And those successive coup d'etats, we cannot deny the fact that they have also contributed towards where we are today. But notwithstanding, we have had a stable democracy since 1992. But I can tell you that we have indeed tried a lot. There are huge investment interests. A lot of people are coming to invest in this country. That cannot be described as a failed state. You're also looking at the stability and fees we have. That can be described as a failed state. You're also looking at the need for us to begin processing some of the things that we otherwise were not processing in the 3 decades ago as they are alluding. That cannot be attributed to a failed state. You are looking at where the state institutions, regardless how weak they are, but measures are being put in place to strengthen them. You can't describe this as a failed state. And the fact that we haven't been able to have a radical changes in the fundamentals of our economy should conclude on the basis of that we are driven towards a failed state. Then I would say that the TUC and labor unions, in fact, are already collapsed and ramshackle.
Well,
because I haven't seen any transformational changes in the operations of such labor unions and organizations.
And the TUC again saying the Bank of Ghana could have done a better job in finding solutions to the depreciation CD rather than the panic reaction it took that all transactions should be in the CD because the dollarization has not helped the economy.
That is also another flawed argument. And I say it's flawed because this thing that the Bank of Ghana has instituted, people should not just condemn. They should ask themselves whether indeed it is yielding some positive results. If you look at the rate at which the CD was depreciating, I think the measures has actually arrested that. We may have the CD depreciating, but it is not depreciating at that same rate. It is also true that these measures, because we copy good practices across the globe, Malaysia indeed introduced this at the time when the entire global community felt, and IMF and World Bank at that time felt, that it was a panic reaction, it never going to yield any results. And in fact, it yielded the needed results that they had. And I think that it is so flawed that if you just conclude that looking at the other side of it, EPA, it was good that my senior brother and senior comrade was talking about EPA. I have agreed. Look, my position on EPA may be different from the position of anybody. But Ghana, we have always taken a position. And that in the spectrum of our national or internal politics and governance, we are mindful of the effect it has on the sub-region and the continent. To that extent, Osagie for Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, even on the day of the Declaration of Independence at Polo Ground, said the independence of Ghana is meaningless unless it is linked up with the total liberation of the African continent. So if you look at our foreign policy position, at any point in time, we have gone with the total or collective decision of either sub-regional or continental, except under Buzia when we indeed voted for apartheid. You know, that was the only time that we had a deviation of our foreign policy and standing toe-to-toe with African countries or sub-regional countries. So if Ghana's position is that, we are going to go by the collective decision of ECOWAS, I don't think that one would tell me it's a flawed, it's a very weak position. Because we are talking about trade, we are talking about financing, we are talking about commerce, we are talking about development, and we cannot do those things in isolation. So it is proper, and in fact essential, that we take a collective decision as a sub-regional body and a continent.
Mutala, has governments over the years been favoring foreign investors over domestic investors? Because the TUC thinks so. It says foreign investors get mouth-watering incentives over their domestic counterparts.
Well, I maybe possibly they needed to have provided the necessary information. But in fact, if you look at this government, focus is given to domestic industries and people, entrepreneurs, to the extent that His Excellency the President didn't just preach it. His Excellency the President demonstrated it by wearing Made in Ghana shoes, which he demonstrated in Parliament. And I think that what he did was enough. And again, if you look at even intellectual capacity of this industry, or where people are given some opportunities, where there are tax reliefs for domestic, if you like, entrepreneurs. And I think for me it's a very positive sign. I do agree that there are some kind of investment that our local industries may not have the capacity, to begin or to compete with. But you see, we don't live in an isolation. You cannot come out again with embargoes. You cannot come out and say that don't import this. The global community, even the WTO own regulations, you can't come out and say that because Ghanaians also produce this, we don't want you to produce it. And I think that you can't do that. Those measures that are put in place, demonstrated by this government for me, is palpable for any discerning person to come to one conclusion that there is total commitment in assuring that our local industries are supported. And that is precisely what government is doing. Yes, I agree with TUC. Maybe possibly we needed to have done what this government is doing earlier, or earlier than we are doing, or we need to also ensure that at least we expedite some of the measures or mechanisms put in place to support our local industry. You cannot talk about even supporting local industries without getting adequate energy. And that is why the focus of this government is to produce or target about 5,000 megawatts. We are about 2,600 thereabouts. As I talk to you, I do know other investments who are even coming to ensure that some are into solar. In fact, I can give a classical example of my constituency, about 200 megawatts of solar. They have virtually signed even the processes of signed agreement with ECG. Once we have adequate supply of energy, what happens is that our industries get adequate supply of energy, it boosts up their effectiveness and efficiency, it leads to expansion, it leads to the creation of jobs, it leads to the reduction of unemployment, and that is the only way you can expand an economy. And so those tax incentives and other opportunities that are created to domestic industry, I think that we need to continuously doing, and that is precisely what government is doing.
Let's also talk about cronyism, partisanship, and incompetence in government. Did you hear the TUC Secretary General also talk about that?
Well, I'm wondering, as far as we are concerned, and as far as this government, yes, I agree that we have reduced everything to partisan, whether NEC or NPP. And let me reiterate the point again. He said that they are not making reference to just this government. They are making reference to successive government. You agree with me that in this country, unfortunately and sadly, everything is reduced to politics. Everything. Every single thing people will be politics.
And he also mentioned cronyism and incompetence.
I'm coming. When he talked about cronyism, he's talking about cronyism, and I think that the TUC would have done it a lot of good. That yes, we are talking about the 30 years cronyism, but this government will have identified this cronyism. I'm wondering. The president indeed has very competent family members. Not a single member of his family is either directly or indirectly engaged in the governance of this country. People have been appointed as ministers and deputy ministers and other government appointees. TUC, if TUC can be bold enough to tell us that, okay, we think that we are driven towards a failed state, I think that they would have been bolder to tell the people of this country that Minister A or Deputy Minister B, who don't think that they deserve to be where they are. I think that would even bring to rest all these issues. As far as we are concerned, you can have some of these challenges, and every economy globally as we see today is going through those challenges. Those challenges we have indicated are but for temporal, and we have no doubt in mind that we will overcome those challenges. Now, so when you come out and say chronism, and like they said, I don't want to be seen talking about it as if I'm being defensive, because they themselves have explained that they are looking at chronism, partisanship, over the years, and they have indicated 30 years, you know, maybe possibly they will even go further than 30 years. And that is true. We have reduced everything to partisan. A classical example. You have a businessman who happened to be a brother to His Excellency the President. And an issue that has involved a company that he happened to be the CEO has become a political issue. Hello?
And
that is the kind of partisanship we're talking about. And we need to move away from that. And that's why I absolutely agree with you, we need to move away from this petty politicking, in fact, political or partisanship. I think that one should move away from that. If you are capable of doing something, you do it. Remember, when His Excellency the President even came out with his initial appointment, there were people even within NDC who said that, no, the President has appointed people who are not core NDC members. It tells you that this President sees things in different lenses, that once you are capable of doing it, that kind of opportunity is given. And we have no doubt in mind that we weather the storm, and the good people will see some of the difficult economic decisions that are taken by this country. Because that is the only way we can change the fundamentals of our economy.
Government has given the indication that it will go ahead and sign the EPA, that you see is raising red flags against
the It is absolutely not accurate. Government has not said anywhere that government is going to sign. You see, when we reduce that intellectual discourse to mere conjecture, we have a problem. The government said palpably.
Is giving the indication.
Who determines indication? So if I make a statement, and because I make a statement one, two, three, and you think that my statement means it, why? We're talking about governance of a state, and the government has indicated publicly that we are taking a collective decision with ECOWAS. Then you will come out and tell me that, okay, government's action and inaction is indicative of the fact that government is doing this. It's just like I see you wearing something red and I say, okay, so you are mourning. You may be wearing red because it's Valentine. You don't necessarily need to wear red when you are mourning. You wear white into a funeral and I see it and I say, you are happy over the death. In some parts of this country, it doesn't matter what you wear. I don't think that the CUC should be reducing this very important issue to what they think. We are not talking about what is in the mind of someone. We are talking about a factual statement issued by government that this is our position. Why should that be so difficult for anybody to comprehend?
But then the TUC has taken a position. So is the, are they asking government not to sign? Would that information in any way influence government's decision?
TUC or labor unions constitute less than 5% of the Ghanaian population. That is one point that's not made very clearly. And if TUC position constitutes less than 5% of the Ghanaian population, and because TUC has taken a position, if government or the entire ECOWAS thinks that there is a need for us to sign EP and we sign, must heaven get loose. If indeed TUC had said that we want government to sign, and the entire ECOWAS takes a decision that governments must not sign, must heaven get loose. I think it's important. But you see, that reminded me on another point. Within TUC, you had a lot of breakaways. And those breakaways, they made several allegations. Can one say because you had breakaways from certain labor unions and allegations of incompetence and corruption and other things, doesn't mean that the labor unions have failed? I think that we need to be measured in the kind of positions and statements we issue.
So even though they are minor 5%, are their concerns not going to be
I'm not saying that their concerns must not. That is certainly not. I'm saying that the concerns of even one individual in this country is very important. But what I'm saying is that the government has taken a position, and the position is that, look, contrary to what people are saying that we sign EPA, no, we only sign EPA if ECOWAS as a collective sub-regional body says that we should sign EPA, we sign. If ECOWAS as a collective sub-regional body says that we should not sign EPA, we will not sign. That is the point I'm making.
All right, Mr. Mohammed, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Mutala Mohammed is the Deputy Minister of Information and Media Relations. Is behind the news live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Accra Behind the News is also live on Ubuntu FM 96.5 in Tema Radio, Upper West 90.1 in Wa, and Radio VR 93.5 in Sinai. Let's go to Barbara for some stories.
Thank you, Agatha. China says he's hopeful of consistent funding to the gas processing plant at Adunabu to ensure it is fully operational by July this year. Other Chinese-funded projects are also expected to start. The incoming Chinese ambassador to Ghana, Sun Gonghong, announces when she and four other envoys presented letters of credence to President John Mahama at Flagstaff House in Accra. The other envoys are from Spain, Malaysia, Pakistan, and Greece. Five people have received prizes of return air tickets from Accra to any destination of their choice in the country. The prize winners participated in a quiz competition organized by Unique FM to mark Ghana Broadcasting Corporation's Heritage Month, which took place in March. Nine other winners were presented with cartons of assorted drinks. Presenting the prizes, the director of radio, Dr. Asomoni, decried the infiltration of foreign cultures through the Ghanaian media. He said this development is a threat to efforts to preserve and promote Ghana's cultural heritage. Vice President Emisa Afa has commended the Rotary Club for its efforts to improve the welfare of Ghanaians in deprived communities through water and sanitation, literacy and health projects. Mr. Emisa Afa said these efforts by Rotary Club and other stakeholders contributed to Ghana being declared polio-free in July last year. The Vice President was speaking at the First District Assembly and Conference for Rotary International District 9102 in Accra.
Now let's read some of your text messages. And Dodenke Nkoko says, do our leaders know or they don't know that Ghana's economy can no longer sustain the fat salaries and allowances being enjoyed by our MPs, ministers and other political position holders? We need patriotic and selfless citizens to take up these positions at a lesser cost. Animota in Afenya says, I like the way you conduct your interviews. You are my mentor. God bless you. Thanks. Animoa Naudi from Pusiga says, why are Ghanaians good at criticism but not good at helping to put things in order? What has the TEC done to sustain the failing economy? God save Ghana. Kwame Nkaneshi says, it's all in Ghana that city authorities lament over the landslide to dump refuse. In other jurisdictions, refuse are used for useful purposes. Must it take the TEC to tell us that Ghana is a failed state? Agle Arnold Kwame Nadansi says, Accra is the heart of Ghana and we are in the rainy season, so AMA should see to it that all the gutters and guards with filth are desilted. Andrew Manga in Boko says, Ghanaians must not blame the ECD for power outages. And Joel from Kusuna Aba says, why are politicians not ready to help solve the economic problems of our beloved mother Ghana, rather interested in condemning the government? It's Behind the News, and the TUC has painted a rather gloomy picture of the economy in a pre-May Day forum in Tema and called for rescue measures to salvage the Ghanaian economy. However, an expert in political marketing and a lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School, Dr. Kobi Mensah, says government can effectively manage all these challenges with the appropriate policies. And Dr. Kobi Mensah has joined us on the line. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
Doc, is the Ghanaian economy in a state that makes it to be described as weak and the state a failing one?
Well, at the moment, I don't think that we can have that description. To be honest, although I don't have any statistics to show, discussions amongst colleagues at a business school, especially those with the finance in the department, and discussions in class, which most of the business executive MBA students actually work in banks, in financial institutions and others, those discussions actually doesn't suggest that the economy is in terrible state as you actually put in it. But yes, there are some concerns that the economy is not in a very good state.
But as a political marketing strategist, can the government still put in place the appropriate strategies to turn the economy around?
Of course. I mean, that is why they were actually, you know, voted into power in the first place. I mean, let's just look at quite a number of things that have actually contributed, you know, to the state of the economy. Now, we know that there had been, you know, increases in the expenditure, i.e., you know, consumers have been paying more for fuel, have been paying more for utilities. At the same time, we know that there had been depreciation in of the city against the major international currencies. And then again, we know that there had been quite a number of incidents that suggest that there's corruption, you know, amongst, you know, the government. So all these things have actually contributed to a lower consumer, you know, confidence in the economy. They have contributed to corporate confidence in the economy. So certainly, if the government can put the right measures in place to put check, you know, on these issues that we have actually outlined, then certainly, yes, we can avert the situation and then increase or improve the consumer and corporate confidence in the economy.
If you talk about the right policies in place, which specific policies will you suggest should be adopted in the medium term to turn the economy around?
Well, we know that when it comes to, you know, forex exchanges, the central bank actually did put some measures. Now, experts in those fields actually suggest that those measures were not enough to sort of buffer the economy from its current woes. So, yes, we can say that perhaps there could be some sort of, consultation to see what other measures they could actually put in place, you know, in terms of arresting the currency, you know, its further depreciation from a major, you know, currencies. Then we know that there had been, you know, series of increases of utilities and of fuel prices. Again, the government perhaps can sort of put some measures in place to sort of buffer, you know, that consumers wouldn't have to be paying more, and as a result would have some confidence. So perhaps there could be a number of measures that the government can actually put in place, i.e., you know, absorbing some of the utility charges and at the same time, you know, putting some forex, you know, policies in place to arrest the further depreciation of the city.
But John, do you think the Bank of Ghana's policies recently adopted is helping in a way to stabilize the depreciating city?
Well, from, again, discussion that I had with some of my students, you know, who, like I said, work in financial institutions, at the earlier point when the, you know, measures were actually put in place, you know, it was reported that there was quite a number of, you know, improvements in the depreciation of the currency. Obviously, most people have actually articulated that, yes, for a short term, it could actually do it, but longer term, it wouldn't, because majority of people also decided to withdraw their money from the banks or to hurry up in terms of, you know, some payments, you know, that involved, you know, foreign currency and a whole lot of things. So I think that short term, as I said, have actually identified, yes, it made sense, but long term, they needed a much more robust and a much more comprehensive plan to the situation.
Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Dr. Kobbi Mensah is an expert in political marketing and a lecturer at the University of Ghana Business School, is behind the news. Let's read some of your text messages. And Andrew Manga in Baku says, Ghanaians must not blame the ECD for power outages. And Kojo Ekins in Cape Coast says, trade unions must keep their peace. We have absolute faith in the government and the leadership of the president. Monica Collins in Avungo says, please help me say kudos to the good people of Wa in the Upper West for keeping the town very clean. And I.A. Yahuza, University of Ghana, says, Mother Ghana has all the resources it needs to make life better for its citizens. What is destroying Ghana is sabotage, corruption, tribalism, favoritism and nepotism of some past and present leaders of even positions of trust. Allah bless Ghana. And Idrisu A.B. Fuseni in Tamale says, God bless you behind the news. You are the best. We can only keep our cities clean if we are able to change our attitudes. Daniel Alitu from Kunye Binwa, he says, you are doing fantastic. Allah in his own wisdom richly bless you. And Luke Kesu says, Madam, in fact, I agree with the TEC boards in a way and disagree with him in another way, because during the former President Kufuor's time, we didn't hear this so-called assessment of our economy, and I hope this will not be limited to this government. Many thanks for your text messages, and this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. My producers were Edmund Tete Baitagama, Phyllis Kofi, John Pobi, and Celestine Avi. Isaac Yawedu controlled the sounds, and Barbara Yakubu read the summary. My name is Agatha Samuel. You have a lovely weekend.